If you can, find a chapter in the Bible in the Old Testament called Isaiah, Isaiah 40. Can you find that? Isaiah chapter 40. And we'll be looking at that this morning as we think about promises, because there's a great promise in Isaiah chapter 40. It was for a people who were waiting for God to act and to change everything. And we'll be thinking about that this morning. So see if you can find Isaiah chapter 40. That would be great. It'll be on the screen, but we'll run through it together. I don't know about you, but one of the realities, and I think it's exacerbated this time of year with all the busyness and the extra pressure of Christmas preparations, is that sometimes you get a bit weary, don't you? And I think as Christians, if you've been a Christian for a while, you ever felt weary about following God? You ever felt, you know what, Lord, I'm following you, but it's hard and I'm tired? And you ever felt like that? I feel that quite regularly. Do you ever feel like that? Be honest. If the pastor feels like that, you're allowed to. It's all right. Don't worry. We haven't got a bunch of people out there going to stone you when you walk out. It's okay. Although that is a possibility, and we could write that into the next church meeting. But if, you know, the reality is sometimes it's hard following you. And you get tired, don't you? Doing the right thing again and again and again. And sometimes it doesn't always pay off straight away, does it? You do the right thing, and so-and-so down the road does the wrong thing. He seems to have everything come up roses, and you're struggling. And you're trying to be the person who follows God and does it right every time. There are some seasons, especially in the Christian life, when, to be really blunt, you just get tired of doing good and hanging in. And this time of year, you know, fatigue is probably endemic, really. You start thinking a little bit sometimes, I was obedient on Monday. I ought to be seeing something, really, shouldn't I, by now? I was obedient on Monday. Why aren't I seeing anything by Friday? Why has nothing happened? Why has nothing changed? Why is it still hard? I've been obedient in giving for months, but I still haven't got one of those mystery checks that people come up and give a testimony about. You know, oh, suddenly £5,000 appeared through the door. And I don't know where going on. That's not happened to me yet, and I keep giving to God, and that's never happening. When's that happening for me? And you just get a bit tired sometimes. Maybe you decided to stay in a tough relationship because you know that's what God would want you to do, and all around people are bailing out for less, for a lot less. And you're thinking, no, I'm going to stay in this. I'm going to be faithful. I'm going to hang in. But he's not changing. She's not changing. In fact, it seems to be getting worse. Sometimes it's just hard and tiring doing the right thing. Keep doing the right thing. So you're just tired. Maybe you're just weary. It's not that you don't love God. It's just that you're a bit worn out. Sometimes we can be. Start praying, Lord, maybe this week I could have the weekend off. Maybe I could just stop being a Christian for a weekend. Go a little bit crazy. It's not that I don't believe. It's just that I'm a bit tired of doing the good thing time and time again. So every now and again, along comes a season where you get tired. Especially if you're following Jesus. You get tired. It's truth. That's what it feels like sometimes. Tired of being good. Tired of being a Christian. Need a day off, a week off, a year off. Either God lowers his standards, or I'll go to a church where I don't understand the sermon. That's the alternative you got. And we've all had those feelings, those thoughts. You just get tired. Today I want to say something. It's okay to be weary. It's okay to be tired. You look through the Bible, you ever think that some of those great characters in the Bible ever got tired? They ever look a bit weary and a bit, oh, for goodness, do I have to keep on doing the right thing all the time? All the time, I expect they felt it. It's acceptable. Here you go, you've got permission. It's acceptable to say, you know what, I'm tired. Following God, but I'm tired. Let me read you a verse, in fact. Here you go, here's a verse, just to encourage you. So don't get tired of doing what is good. Don't get discouraged and give up. You know why that was written? Do you have a hint why that might have been given to that church? What do you think that church in Galatia was feeling like? Tired. Hence the phrase. You know, you're tired. Paul acknowledged it. Do you know why he said that? That's because they were. The Bible acknowledges there will be seasons when you're sitting alone at home and you say, I'm tired of this. When you're driving away from work and you're thinking, I'm tired of this. When you pull up to the drive and you say, oh Lord, they're back already. Maybe I'll go and do some errands instead, just to delay going in because you're tired of dealing with it. There are seasons like that. I want to look at a story from Isaiah chapter 40, and it's all about people who felt like that, who felt tired and weary, and were just sort of thinking, maybe I'll give up. Just like those people in Galatia. Maybe I'll just go on holiday for a while, on holiday from God for a while, and I'll give up. And Isaiah 40 was written to those people. The Old Testament, let me give you a little recap. The Old Testament is the history of Israel. Let me show you a little map. There you go, there's Israel. And this is Israel at a certain point in its history. The Old Testament story of Israel. For a long time they didn't have a king, you know that? Didn't have any kings. God said, I'm your king, you don't need one. And they said, yeah, but everybody else has got a king, we want one. So he said, oh, right, even though he knew it wasn't good for them. He said, okay, you're going to have a king. Didn't work out so well, strangely enough. But, you know, they wanted a king. So they got the kings. And he gave them Saul, not too good, maybe 5 out of 10. Then came David, 10 out of 10. Well, 9, you know, it wasn't perfect. There was that Bathsheba thing, you know. So he's 9 out of 10 maybe for David. And then David's son, who was David's son who became king? Solomon. Very intelligent, very bright, very wise man. But still Solomon made plenty of mistakes in his life, if you read about it. But soon after Solomon, there was all sorts of political trouble in the kingdom, the one kingdom that was called Israel. And the kingdom split. You remember that in the Old Testament? The kingdom split in half because they couldn't agree on who was the next king after Solomon. So you ended up with Israel in the north of the country. There you go. And you end up with Judah in the south. Judah had Jerusalem and Bethlehem and places like that. That was the kingdom of Judah. The kingdom of Israel. Both Jewish kingdoms, but they'd split in half at this point. And most of the kings in the northern country of Israel were pretty lousy. You read about all of them. There were very few good ones, hardly any good ones at all. They were all pretty bad. They introduced foreign religions. They forgot about God. They made all sorts of compromises with countries around them just to get power and money and status. And it was a bad deal. You know, the UK's having all sorts of questions now. What's our relationship with the US now that certain somebody's going to be in power from January? What's our relationship going to be like? What compromises will be made? I mean, this northern country of Israel made so many compromises, it was dreadful. And they behaved like all the nations around them. Instead of behaving like the nation God said you should behave like, because you're supposed to reflect me, but instead they just reflected the countries around them. That was Israel. Judah, it was bad, but it wasn't quite so bad. They had a mixed bag. They had some good kings, some bad kings. The good kings would keep getting the people together and saying, come on, let's get back to God. Let's pray. Let's get on our knees. Let's ask good God to help and intervene in our world, not just do it ourselves. They did that. But they also had some bad ones. Bad ones who made lousy alliances, who did exactly what the kings in Israel did. The story we're looking at takes place in about 735 BC. Isaiah 40 is written about then. The king of Israel, the northern kingdom, he goes off to the king of Aram, a foreign nation on its borders, and he forges a little alliance with them. And he forges the alliance to do something really, really stupid. He says, let's go and let's attack Assyria. Assyria at that point was a superpower in the world. One of the most powerful military nations on the planet at that time. Assyria was a superpower. They had the biggest army, the biggest economy, and whatever they wanted, they took. You would have been crazy to mess, as Israel, with Assyria. It would have been a really bad idea. But Israel goes a bit crazy, and they try and get Aram on board, this other country, and they send messages when they do this little alliance, and they send it to the king of Judah. The king of Judah at the time was Ahaz. He was in the southern kingdom. Now, he was one of the bad ones. He was one of the bad ones in the southern kingdom. He was a lousy king, immoral king. He was so bad, the people refused to bury him with the rest of the kings. When he died, they said, no, we're not burying him with them. He was the worst of the lot. We'll bury him. I don't know where they put him. I haven't got a clue. Maybe on a mantelpiece somewhere. But they got, you know, they didn't want him around. So he sacrificed, he even sacrificed some of his own kids to a foreign god, literally. That's how bad he was. Child sacrifice, his family. That's the sort of guy he was. Closed the temple, set up pagan altars everywhere. Bad king. He was a bad king, but he wasn't an idiot. He wasn't an idiot. So when the king of Israel says, well, I've got a pact with Aram and we're going after Assyria. We're going to knock him down a peg or two. And he thinks, oh boy, this is a bad idea. Even though he's a bad king. He knows it's a no-win situation. He also knows that if he says no to Israel, Israel and Aram are going to take that as an excuse. They're going to say, well, that makes you our enemy, not our friend. And they're going to combine and attack Judah, which they can do, because there's two nations against one. And that's what starts to happen. He's in a no-win situation. He says, yes, Assyria kills him. He says, no, Israel and Aram attack. So here they are. Meanwhile, in Judah, there's a whole bunch of believers. There's a whole bunch of people who don't do what King Ahaz does, who don't do what the kings of Israel do, who follow God. They follow God, and they follow God faithfully, despite the fact their king doesn't care, despite the fact Israel doesn't care, but they're still hanging in there with God. You know what? They see all this going on, and they hear about the politics, they think we're in this no-win situation, and you know what? They must have felt like sometimes you feel as a Christian, why am I carrying on following you, God? This is just a no-winner. This doesn't feel great. Why am I just being faithful when the king isn't and nobody else is? Why should I? Why should I? Why should I remain faithful anymore? Why should we continue? Because nothing is coming our way, nothing good anyway. It's bad either way, whatever happens. That's the dilemma. That those who were still following God in Judah, and there were a lot of them, they were still following God, but that's the dilemma they were in. They were tired. Meanwhile, Ahaz is trying to make up his mind, and he hears that Aram has already started some little raids on his border. They're already testing the ground to see if this attack on Judah is going to work. And the armies of Israel are starting to march on Jerusalem. They're already started, so it's all going off. And in the midst of all this chaos, God sends a prophet to this king who doesn't want anything to do with God in Judah, Ahaz. And God sends a prophet to him, to the people of Judah. And this is the message, Isaiah 40 is the message in the midst of that, that God brings to a faithful people who are tired of following because even their king doesn't seem to care and nobody seems to care. Let's read it together. This is Isaiah 40, verse 1. Listen to this. Comfort, comfort my people, says your God. This is the prophet Isaiah who was sent to them at this time. Speak tenderly to Jerusalem. Jerusalem's in Judah. It's the southern kingdom. Tell her that her sad days are hard service. In other words, her faithfulness, when it's hard and it's tiring, her faithfulness, her hard days, her sad days are gone, and that their sins are pardoned. Yes, the Lord has punished her in full for her sins. God was saying to Judah, to the people, the faithful people in Judah, who were hanging in there, he's saying to them, what's happening right now? This circumstance is not a punishment on you. This is not a punishment for your sins. This chain of events is not because I'm paying you for something you've done. He's reassuring them. Those faithful people, he's saying, hang in there. Then verse 3, this is what he says, listen to this. Listen, I hear the voice of someone shouting, make straight a highway for the Lord through the wilderness. Make a straight, smooth road through the desert for our God. Fill the valleys and level the hills. Straighten out the curves and smooth out the rough spots. Then the glory of the Lord will be revealed. And all people will see it together. The Lord has spoken. Here's what he's saying to Judah, who are tired, following nobody else does. It looks as though God has forgotten his promise. It looks to you as though God is inactive and doesn't care anymore. Isaiah says to them, God has not deviated. God has not forgotten you. God has still got a plan, and this is his plan. Even though circumstances don't seem to hint at it, hang in there. He goes on to ask a bunch of questions, Isaiah, of the people, just to try and drill it home. Before you give up on me, he says, before you do what Ahaz and Israel and Aram and everybody else is doing, before you just bail on me, says God, I have a few questions for you. Answer them and see where you end up. And here's his questions. Verse 12. He says, who else has held the oceans in his hand? Who's measured off the heavens in his fingers? Who knows the weight of the earth? Or has weighed out the mountains and the hills? Who's able to advise the Spirit of the Lord? Who knows enough to be his teacher or his counselor? Has the Lord ever needed anybody's advice? Does he need instruction about what is good or what is best? And here he's saying, just before you shrug me off, just before you bail on me, Israel, I know it's tough and I know you're tired, but before you do that, would you remember who you are dealing with? Would you remember who I am? This is the God who created the heavens and the earth. The God who needs no advisors, doesn't need to ask for advice, doesn't need to be enlightened about anything. Have you ever tried enlightening God? Have you ever done that? Have you ever enlightened God? We do it all the time. I do it all the time. I'll do it all the time. I say, God, do you realize what is happening? I'm trying to enlighten God as if God has not noticed. Have you ever done that? Don't you know? Don't you realize, God, what is happening? Don't you understand what's going on in my life at the moment? Don't you understand what's going on in church at the moment, right now? Don't you realize I haven't made this deal for so long, or I haven't had this break for so long, or I haven't had this relief for so long? Don't you realize? And we try and enlighten God. You ever enlightened God? We've all done it. We don't mean to offend God. We just don't think he's paying attention. And Isaiah says, does anybody need to enlighten him? Does he not know? Does anybody need to advise him about this stuff? He knows. He sees. This is who you're dealing with. And then verse 15. No, for all the nations of the world are nothing in comparison with him. They're but a drop in the bucket, dust on the scales. Picks up the islands as though they had no weight at all. The nations of the world are as nothing to him. His eyes, in his eyes, they are less than nothing, mere emptiness and froth. He's saying, you're so worried about these nations. You're worried about Israel in the north with its alliance with Aram and their plans, their crazy plans to, and whatever they do is going to be bad for you. And you're worried about these nations. I understand your concern, but step back a minute. Here's a question. Here's a question. Who is your God? Is he bigger than they are? Who is your God? We did that series, didn't we? Is God big enough? Is your God big enough? Or is he a small God in your head that can't handle all this stuff? This is the God who rescued you, who turned slaves into kings. This is the God who did so much for you. Did the impossible for a nation who had no home and no name, who didn't even, nobody knew it, didn't even know they were a nation. They were just owned by Egypt. Suddenly they become something, something great. And under David, they became their own little superpower. Don't you know what I've done for you, he says. And you're about to abandon me, he says. You're about to walk out on me because of a set of circumstances or a season of weariness, but you're going to walk out on me. This is who I am. Do you remember that? You're going to walk out because something happened at work or because something happened in your family, because something happened in church. You're just about to give it up. I understand it seems like the whole world to you and it seems so big. But are you about to abandon the God of history? who moves the heart of kings and nations, and to whom they are nothing. Think about it, Judah. You're going to walk out on me now? Verse 18, he keeps asking his questions. To whom then can we compare God? What image might we find to resemble him? Have you never heard or understood? Are you deaf to the words of God? The words he gave before the world began. Are you so ignorant, he says. So before you make this decision, before you send that email, he says, before you write that letter, he says, just pause. And I want to think about who you are abandoning. God, me. Verse 22. It's God who sits above the circle of the earth. The people below must seem to him like grasshoppers. He's saying, you're afraid of kings? They're just bugs. To me, they're just bugs. You're afraid of your boss? Your boss is an ant. You're afraid of your peers? Your peers are just grasshoppers. He's not treating people with disdain here. He's not saying people aren't valuable and they don't matter. He's not saying that. He's saying get some perspective compared to me. Who are these people? Don't walk away from me based on a set of circumstances or a stage of life over which you think I have no control. I'm God. I'm God. And he reminds them of that. He keeps going on, to whom will you compare me? Who's my equal? Ask the Holy One. Look up into the heavens who created the stars. He's saying, wait. Listen, okay, last chance. Here we go. I know you're tired. I know you're weary. I know you're doing good. And you're not getting the payoff. I know you're thinking, why should I bother? I know you're like that. But I know that. But before you sign the papers, before you call the lawyer, I know you want to quit your job. I know you want to invite that person to move in. I know you're on the verge, but just listen. Tonight, will you give me one night? Will you go out your back door? Will you stop long enough and look up at the stars? And will you gaze at them long enough until your heart simply says, wow. Will you look into that expanse above you? And will you ask yourself, am I really considering abandoning this God? The God who created all this for the sake of them. He says, give me one night, go out the back, look at the stars, and pause before you do what you want to do. And in verse 27, he gets personal again. Israel, how can you say the Lord does not see your troubles? How can you say God refuses to hear your case? And they were in exactly the same situation, I think, we're in. When we're tired of doing good and we're tired of following God. Oh, I know he created the sun and the moon and the stars. I know he did all that. He's this massive God and he does all that and he moves nations and kings. But he doesn't know about me. He doesn't see my problems. My way is hidden from the Lord. That's what it says in the NIV. He doesn't know about my job. He doesn't know about my depression. He doesn't know about my loneliness. I could be single for the rest of my life and God wouldn't care. He's not focused on that, is he? Isaiah says, don't turn your back on me now. Your ways are known to me. I see. How can you say the Lord does not see your troubles? He does. He knows. Your circumstances are not hidden from him. And in verse 28, this is what he says. Have you never heard or understood? Don't you know The Lord is the everlasting God. He's the creator of all the earth. He never grows faint or weary. No one can measure the depths of his understanding. Of course, your circumstances don't make sense because no one can measure the depths of his understanding. Of course, you don't understand what's going on. And you think, I'm just tired. I'm just going to give up. I'm going to walk out. Of course, it's not working out how you'd planned. You know why? Because it's his plan. It's not your plan. He's God and you're not. If you could understand God fully, do you know what you would be? You would be God. How can a human being understand God fully if God really is God? We can't fathom. And we don't see and we don't understand. But could I argue that's actually normal for a human being who's trying to understand the prime mover of the universe? And now here's the promise. Because this series is all about Christmas promises. Hey, we finally get the promise. Here's the promise for these weary people, of whom you might be one. This is what he says. He gives power to those who are tired and who are worn out. He offers strength to the weak. You know what that means? It means when you're weary, you're not sinning. A lot of us beat ourselves up. I'm tired. I should be better. I should be able to cope with this stuff. I ought to handle this better. I ought to be stronger than I am. I ought, you know, shoulds and oughts are dangerous. If you ever hear the word should or ought in any sentence you're saying, I'd ask you a question. Who says you should? Who says you ought? It's usually a voice of mum or dad in the past or something like that, or some significant other who was quite hard on you, actually. Who made you feel a bit wobbly and a bit weak and a bit useless. And should and oughts are usually another voice. It's not yours. And this says it's okay to be tired. It's okay to be weary. It's quite human. It's okay. And when you're weary, it means you can ask him for strength. You can ask him for power. And when you ignore that or shuffle it away or deny it or no, I can't feel like that, you never go to him. You never turn to him. You just try and bang on in your own strength. It doesn't work. Weariness is not an avenue to abandon God. Weariness is an avenue to fall on your knees and to say, help. That's what weariness is. To deal with him honestly for a change. Stop trying to be this brave, courageous, all-achieving human being that doesn't exist on the planet, quite frankly. And admit you need him. Do you know what he'll do if you do that? If you get honest with God and say, I am tired and weary. No, it's not a sin. It's not a sin to be tired and weary. It's okay. You know what he'll do? Will he clip you around the ear and say, pull your socks up? I don't think he'll do that. Will he recommend a good self-help course or a shelf in Waterstones? Will he do that? I don't think he'll do that. You know what he'll do? Verse 30 tells you what he'll do. Even youths become exhausted and young men will give up, but those who wait on the Lord will find new strength. Strength they didn't have before and they didn't know they could possess. If you lean into him. That little word, wait, hava, in the Hebrew, is a wonderful word. It's pivotal in this whole passage. It's a word used to describe a thief or a robber who's hiding at the side of the road, waiting. You know, it's that sort of alert, tense, here we go. It's that sort of waiting, very purposeful waiting. It's an eager, anticipatory waiting. It's waiting for something to happen. Those who wait like that on God will renew their strength. He says, of course, you can't do anything about the king. You can't do anything about your Israel. You can't do anything about Aram. You can't do anything about Assyria. You can't do anything about those. You're pretty powerless as far as those set of circumstances are concerned. But if you will wait and anticipate and be ready, weary as you are, if you believe, your ways are not hidden from me, he says. and you expect me to do something, you will find the strength you need in the time that you need it. There's that wonderful verse. It says, it's one of my favorites in the Bible. They will fly on wings like eagles. You ever seen an eagle fly? Did you see Planet Earth 2 the other day? How does an eagle fly compared to, say, a hummingbird? Hummingbird, a lot of work. Eagle, just glides, doesn't it? Doesn't flap. No flapping intended. You know, we flap. But those who wait on the Lord don't have to flap anymore. They will run, they won't grow weary. They will walk and they won't be faint, it says. Here's what God's saying to the people, and I think what God is saying to us in what is a busy season, or what may be in a tough year, when you've been following faithfully, but you're thinking, Lord, it doesn't feel like any payoff. And you're thinking, maybe, is it worth it? This is what God is saying. Please, in your weariness, do not abandon me. Do not lose faith because I'm not acting as quickly as you would like. Don't walk away because I'm not doing what you think I should be doing. Because your weariness is not a reflection of my lack of strength, of my control, or of my power. Your weariness is not a reflection of that. Your weariness is an indication that you need to step back for a moment, that you need to gaze up into those stars, and you need to remember who I am. So that you can say, if you can do all that, then you can surely intervene in my life. If you can do all that, then you're not the God I should turn my back on. You're the God I should lean into more than ever. Not lean away, lean in. And we're all adults, we know that. There's no benefit in walking away from God and saying, God, it's too hard, I've got to go. God, it's too lonely, I've got to go. God, I'm too broke, I've got to go. God, it's not working out, I've got to go. How many times have we heard people's testimonies? Have you heard people's testimonies, baptisms, where often people say, well, I became a Christian and I followed God and then something happened, so I walked away for a while. And here I am, I'm back. You hear that time and time again. Folks who, it's too hard, gotta go. But now they're back. The problem is they're back with scars and wounds that didn't need to happen. Because it was hard and you walked away. And now you've done it your way. And that has some consequences. And often you hear testimonies of baptism where people say, I did this and then I walked away from where I slipped away. I haven't seen God for years. Live my life, but now I'm back. Back with a few regrets. Back with a lot of mistakes, but I'm back. I'm back with God. You don't win by turning your back when you're weary. Your only win is to lean harder into God and say, I'm trusting for your strength because I'm tired and my hope, my expectation. I'm waiting like that robber at the side of the road with anticipation and expectation. I'm waiting on my tiptoes, I'm waiting for you. That's when you renew your strength. And you might not work this out, but God is most honored and glorified in your life. Actually, not when you get everything right. You ever work that out? God's not most glorified when you work, when you get it all sorted. You know when God is glorified? God gets more credit when you remain faithful, even though you're weak and you're tired. That's when he gets the credit. A bit like Job. Remember that story of Job? You know, just hit him with a few things and then he'll back off. Then he'll give you up, God. And he didn't. And who got the glory? God. God is more glorified when you're weak and you're tired and you're following than when you're strong and you're confident and you're great and you're following. He is more glorified by that. Have you ever thought about that? That's what you're doing. You're glorifying God. And God looks down and says, look at that guy over there. He's the only Christian in the workplace or in that college or in that school or in that marriage. He's so tired. He's so weary, but he's so faithful. Look at him. Maximum glory to God. That's what you do when you hang in there. And you know what God says? You know what God says at that point? God says, you know what I'm going to do? Because that guy, I'm going to strengthen him. I'm going to strengthen him in the middle of those circumstances. I'm going to take the circumstances away. I'm going to strengthen him because he's honoring me so powerfully. I believe that's what God does. You need to know what it means for some of you this morning. It means you need to wake up every morning, and you might need to read Isaiah 40 when you're feeling like that. Do that this week. A little challenge for you in your devotional time, whenever it is in the day. Just read Isaiah 40 and those verses that just come out at you. Maybe it's God reminding you, who am I? Don't forget who I am. Maybe it's remembering that he does see you, he does care. Maybe it's getting some perspective, that the circumstance around me compared to who God is. Maybe you need to do that. But read through that passage this week, every day this week, and see if that makes a difference to you. Read Isaiah 40. Maybe step out of your back door, if the clouds keep away long enough in the UK, and look up at the stars. And look long enough until you say, wow. That's who he is. How could I abandon someone who could do all that? Why would I walk away from him? And here's how Paul finished that verse in Galatians. 735 years after Isaiah walked into Judah and told King Aram and the people who were still hanging in, after he said this, 735 years later, this is what Paul said. Don't get tired of doing what is good. Don't get discouraged and give up, for we will reap a harvest of blessing at the appropriate time. Why? Because God is at work. God is at work. And we're looking at the second hand and we're looking at the minute hand, but God tends to operate in terms of calendars, doesn't he? 735 years later, he said that and a lot had changed, but it took 735 years. God tends to operate slightly more glacially than we would like, but he does work. And God's promise in the Old Testament and the New Testament is this: if in our weakness we can lean harder into him, he will strengthen us. We will reap a harvest of blessing if we do not give up. That is a promise in God's word. Hang on to that. So we're going to close, but we're going to sing a couple of songs. And what we're going to do during that is some of you might want us to pray or to read a few verses to you over in response to this. So the front row is empty. Let's face it, it's a Baptist church, so the front row is always empty. Nobody ever sits down here, just in case I pick on you. But the front row is empty. If you want to come down here while we're singing some of this stuff, me and Rod are going to be down here. If you want us to read prayerfully for you a bit of Psalm 40, we're going to do that while we're singing. All right, we're going to sing two songs, but this is your moment if you want us to read and pray to you. In fact, let's open it up. If there's anything you want prayer for or somebody you want prayer for, so let's take away the stigma that you're down here because you've got a problem. Oh, you know, nobody, you have got problems. All of you have. I have. I'm down here. So face the reality. But for any prayer, if you want anything for us to pray, we will pray for you. But we'll specifically be reading Psalm 40 for you as well. If you're a bit tired, a bit weary, you're doing good, and you just want to be reminded of those words. So these next two songs we're going to sing through. Come on down the front if you want us to pray for you while that's happening. All right, let's stand and let's worship him.